Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. I have a ton of stuff to talk about today, including the winners of our Murky Depths contest. I'm going to save most of it for after the story. We also are going to have more promos than normal at the end. Our story today is Grounders by Jonathan McGoran. Dubbed the newest of the Bloodbards by Philadelphia Weekly, Jonathan McGoran, a.k.a. D.H. Dublin, is the author of the forensic crime thrillers Body Trace and Blood Poison, as well as Freezer Burn, published this month by Penguin Books. Our narrator is Thomas Command Line Gideon. Thomas is a professional software engineer and a lifelong hacker. He is also a hackivist, which he defines as someone who uses technology to address social issues. Using the new medium of podcasting with his twice-weekly show, The Command Line, he discusses the rough edges where society, public policy, and computers meet. Thomas is also a second-generation fan of speculative fiction, and has lent skills learned in producing The Command Line to a growing list of audio productions. Now, on to our story. Grounders by Jonathan McGoran. Closing time. Game over. But some people think it's more than a game. Some people don't want to go home. They don't have to. But they can't stay here. Because you stay too long down here, they send the grounders.
Grounders by Jonathan McGoran. Lowry's bar looked pretty much like every other bar I'd seen down there. It had the same flat gray walls. It had the same dull light that seemed to come from everywhere but the generic light fixtures hanging from the ceiling. It even had the same kitschy crap on the walls that they all probably got from the same place. The sign in the front said, Bar. What distinguished Lowry's from the other two bars I had been to that day was the redhead in the corner. She had on some kind of green dress I hadn't seen before, and she was leaning against a column, staring at a dark-haired guy in a basic plaid shirt, sitting alone at the bar, talking to himself. I knew as soon as I spotted her that she was the one who called. Brady knew it too. Brady was my radio man. He used to work in law enforcement until a bullet shattered his pelvis and snipped off the last few inches of his spine. He usually kept pretty quiet, hardly spoke except over his radio. That was okay with me. I'm Monroe, I said as we approached the redhead. You're the one that called? She turned and looked at me, but didn't say anything. Is that the guy? I asked. Yeah, that's him. I didn't see her mouth move, or anything else. Does he have a name? I asked. Probably. I don't remember it. Usually when we got a call, it was from someone worried about a friend. She didn't seem like much of a friend. Is he talking to himself? She gave a shrug that was awkward, but convincing. It must have cost her a lot. He might be, she said. He might think he's still talking to me. I don't know. I don't think he's noticed I'm not there anymore. Is that why you called us? Because of the talking? She turned away. I called because he won't leave me alone. I looked her up and down and gave a pretty good shrug myself. Doesn't mean he's gone loopy. She turned back to me and her eyes rolled. No, I mean it. For real. Wherever I go, there he is. When I'm here, he's here. I go to the Grand Canyon or the Eiffel Tower, there he is. I go home, he's waiting for me when I come back, or he finds me in a hurry. So you think he's in trouble? I asked her. I think he's weirding me out. I didn't say anything, but she didn't let me get away with it. What? She demanded. You're concerned for the guy. It's touching. She was silent for a second. Then she turned and walked away. Whatever, she said over her shoulder. The dress shimmered tightly across her exceptionally high-definition backside, in a manner that went a long way toward explaining the guy's obsession. If she really minded the attention, she could have chosen a different dress, or a different backside. The guy at the bar was mumbling gibberish, his voice getting louder, then softer, but never making sense. I'd heard that song 1,000 times now, but it was still depressing. His eyes were staring straight ahead, like he wasn't using them. I'd seen that too. The blank face and the nonsense talk were creepy enough, but what really bothered me was thinking about the kind of life these losers went home to. Working down here, I didn't see it firsthand, but I had read enough reports when I started. I could picture it. I sat on the stool next to him, but he didn't seem to notice. Brady came up on the other side of him. "Hey, buddy," I said, but he just kept on with the gibberish. The thumb and forefinger of his right hand were drawing little circles on each other, over and over again. I'd seen stuff like that before, too. I put my hand on his shoulder. His name was Zeke, and he'd been down there for 37 hours. "Hey, Zeke," I said, a notch louder. I preferred to try to make contact before bringing someone in, even though sometimes it was better for everyone if you didn't. I gave his shoulder a little shake, but he was gone, so I reached over and put my left hand over his left hand. He didn't seem to notice that either. I had the cuffs in my pocket, but I didn't think I'd have to use them. Brady pressed the button on the radio unit in his ear, and I looked at my watch. I saw some strange things in my job, but it was times like that, sitting there for those long minutes, holding hands with some crazy, pathetic bastard. No idea who he was or what he was hiding from. That's when I questioned my choice of career. I knew I was doing good, helping people, all that stuff, but when I really stopped to think about it, I had to wonder what the hell I was doing with my life. 10 minutes passed, me sitting there holding this guy's hand, Brady standing motionless beside me, his hand cupping the radio in his ear. The gibberish unspooled without interruption. Then Brady's radio chirped quietly, and he looked over at me. "Got him." Half a second later, the gibberish abruptly stopped, and Zeke's head came up. His eyes were still blank, but he seemed to be using his ears. Then the eyes came alive, too. He looked down at my hand resting on his, but it was too late. Even after all this time on the job, I still expected it to feel like something. 1 second my hand was resting on top of his, the next second he was gone. I didn't feel a thing. Brady was listening to the radio, nodding to himself as I stood up. No one in the bar even looked our way. The girl in the green dress was gone, and I was a little disappointed. I would have liked to watch her walk away again. Maybe I'd play it back later. I was about to say as much to Brady, but I stopped when I remembered it was Brady. He wouldn't improve. As we approached the exit, Brady's hand still cupped over his ear, he spoke for the first time since we had walked in. "Emaciated and filthy," he said without inflection, repeating what he was being told. "They say the place stinks like hell." "I'm sure it does," I said as I opened the door. They put him on an IV. Brady always wanted to hear the report from the grounders. I tried not to think about it any more than I had to. "Where to next?" I asked, holding the door for him. I paused before following, hoping for one last look at that green dress before I let the door close. But it was still gone. As soon as we got outside, Brady told me where we were going. We got there pretty quick. One of the perks of the job was that it didn't take too long to get where you were going. Unfortunately, the places we were going tended to be pretty much the same. It made the little differences stand out. For instance, where the last place had the redhead in the green dress, this place had a guy at the bar with a shiny head, a thick neck, and shoulders at least 2 sizes bigger than mine. I preferred the redhead. I showed the doorman my ID. "Got a tip about a guy named Pascal. You know him?" He scanned my ID and looked at my face. "You're here for Pascal?" I nodded. The corners of his mouth clicked up, and he waved me in. "He might be at the bar in the back room. Good luck." There was only one guy at the bar in the back room. He didn't have the vacant look most of them had, but that didn't mean too much. I'd seen that before. The suit he was wearing looked like real cloth. When he picked up his glass, you could see the fabric wrinkle around the elbow. Must have cost a fortune. I sat at the stool to the right of him, and Brady stood to his left. Before I could say his name, he looked over at me and started to laugh. It was the best laugh I'd heard in the 4 years I'd been working down there. It sounded deep and real. People in the front room turned to see where it was coming from, or maybe what was causing it. "The health department?" he said with a smile that seemed to glow. "You're kidding me, right?" I used my shrug, but now it felt lame and inadequate. "Been a while since you've gone topside, Pascal." He nodded, but he didn't say anything. The guy was making me nervous. I didn't know exactly what to make of him. "Nice jacket," I told him. "Where'd you pick that up?" He grabbed a lapel and balled it up in his fist. It crumpled and stayed, then slowly unfurled. The movement was mesmerizing. "Oh, this old thing?" he laughed. "I made it myself. I'm a self-made man." For a second, I thought maybe he'd gone loopy after all. But as I leaned forward, I could see a fine stubble on his chin. It glinted in the light from the bar. His skin had pores. The guy was doing it for himself, and he was good. "I know it seems great down here," I said, starting my usual spiel, "but you can't forget about things at home, you know? You lose track of time down here. A lot can go wrong upstairs." "Look," he said with a laugh, quieter than the earlier one, but just as authentic. "I understand what you guys are trying to do, and I respect it, I really do." He raised his glass at me, then at Brady, then he put it back on the bar. "You perform an invaluable service. It's just not a service I happen to need, okay? So why don't you go help someone who needs it? There's plenty around." He pointed at a guy sitting in the front room, motionless except for his eyes as he watched three girls in identical bikinis dancing on a table. Like that guy there, for instance. "You do seem pretty lucid," I conceded. I looked over at Brady, and he looked back at me with that same expressionless face, his hand cupped around his ear. For the first time since we'd been working together, it started to piss me off. Did he even know how to use his face? Pascal smiled. "Well, there you go, okay? So go on and find someone else to save." "Yeah, maybe," I said, putting my hand on his shoulder. I was having a hard time getting a read on him. "But we have to make sure, okay?" "Please don't do that," he said evenly. "Look, you got nothing to worry about. We're with Human Services, we're not cops." "Who said anything about cops?" "No one did. I'm just saying we're not cops. There's a lot of them up there, doing cop stuff, tracking hackers, trying to trace that data dump yesterday that nearly crashed the system." "Didn't crash the system though, did it?" he countered. "No, but it could have. No harm, no foul. Now please remove your hand." "Whatever," I said, leaving my hand where it was. "Forget about that. My point is you've got some nice threads and a convincing smile. Maybe you have some custom apps you're not sharing with admin. All I'm saying is we don't care about that. We're with Human Services. We're just trying to make sure no one gets hurt. So when you hear a knock on the door, you log off and answer it. You tell them everything is okay. They won't push it. We're not looking to bust anybody. We just don't want anybody getting so deep in the game they forget to eat, drop dead topside. We just want to make sure folks log off here before they log off up there. You know what I mean?" His head snapped around and his eyes flashed red as he snarled, "Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape." As he said it, he rolled his shoulder out from under my hand, and for a second I thought things were going to get ugly. My free hand reflexively slipped into my pocket and fingered the cuffs before I recognized the sound clip. His eyes softened, and he let out that laugh again, the louder one. "Planet of the Apes," he said. "Yeah, I know." I felt myself smiling too, and I couldn't tell if it was real or in the game. Brady was oblivious. He could have been listening intently to his ear radio. He could have been asleep. I put my hand back on Pascal's shoulder. "Seriously, it's time to go topside, man." He laughed the quiet laugh and shook his head at my persistence. "A bit late for that, I'm afraid." He rolled his shoulder again, but this time I kept my hand in place. I finally got a read on him, and I was astonished. 117 hours? You've been logged on for 5 days? For God's sake, you can't live like that. You need to go back home. Now. He looked me in the eye and it stopped me. There was a clarity in his eyes, a light I had never seen in a game head, or anyone else down there for that matter. The guy was looking at me. "Don't you get it?" he said. "I am home." He took my hand off his shoulder and put it on the bar. I tried to put it back, but it wasn't working anymore. I couldn't move it at all. I stared at my dead hand for a second, sitting there on the bar. When I looked back at Pascal, he was standing. "Sorry," he said, flashing that glowing smile again as his hand touched the back of my neck. This time I was sure things were going south. I don't know what kind of hack the guy had pulled, but it was deep. I couldn't move anything below the spot where he had touched me. Brady seemed oblivious, his hand cupped around his ear. "Got him," he said, just as Pascal's hand rested on the back of his neck. I didn't know at first if Brady was paralyzed like me. With Brady, it was hard to tell. Then his head twisted awkwardly as he looked around and said, "I can't move." Pascal tossed a credit on the bar. "Don't worry, boys. You'll be back online in no time. Thanks for your concern, but don't come after me." "Monroe?" Brady asked. "What's going on?" If I didn't know he was incapable of inflection, I would have sworn I'd heard fear in that toneless voice of his. I didn't know what to tell him. I was a little frightened, too. The guy had obviously hacked the game, hacked the hell out of it. I had no idea what he was going to do next. I had told Pascal we weren't looking to bust anybody, and we weren't, but something like this I would have to report, and then they'd come after him heavy. And not human services either. This would be the police, maybe even the lawyers. He'd get ejected at the very least, suspended, maybe barred for life, hacking it like that. The company wasn't about to take it lightly. Pascal, wait, I called out. 5 days. You can't last much longer up there. You know what, he said, leaning forward and lowering his voice conspiratorially. Pascal's not my real name. You can call me Paul. Paul Maynard. He picked up my limp hand and shook it, then put it back on the bar. That should make your job a little easier. Even though Brady was already paralyzed, and already Brady, he seemed to stiffen even more at this infraction. The name sounded familiar, but I couldn't place it. You keep throwing around your topside name, you'll get yourself ejected anyway, I told him. Don't worry, I won't get ejected. And don't worry about the name, I'm done with it topside. Okay, so you told us your name. Mind telling us where you're logged? He smiled. I'll let you guys figure that out. Now if you'll excuse me, I have to get going. It wasn't until he was turning toward the exit that I recognized the name. Wait a second, I called after him. Did you say Paul Maynard? He touched his hand to his forehead and did a slight bow. In the flesh. Jesus, I said quietly. It actually looked a lot like him. I'd seen his picture in magazines, once for an article about how at the age of 23 he was one of the main architects of the game and crazy rich. They used the same photo a year later with a tragic story about how he'd been diagnosed with some terrible degenerative neuromuscular disorder. Maynard, wait, I called after him. You should know better than anybody. There's more to life than the game. He paused at the door. For you, maybe. Then he was gone. The bar was silent for a moment until Brady's radio chirped. His hand was already at his ear. He still couldn't move it, but I watched as he listened, his head slightly bowed. What's that? He asked loudly, listening for a second before demanding, please repeat? I'd never heard Brady ask for a repeat before. What? I asked, as the first flickers of sensation returned to my hand. What is it? Brady looked at me for a second, the bar still quiet like everybody was holding their breath. They found him, he finally said. An apartment in San Diego. Pascal? Pascal Maynard, whoever. Still logged on. Had the whole virtual setup with some kind of implants. Is he okay? He's dead. They're saying at least 3 days. As soon as my body came back online, I went after him, but he was gone, and I knew he would be. I tried to convince the grounders in San Diego to keep him online, but the landlord was already complaining about the smell. 3 days. It was pretty hard to argue the guy wasn't dead. I saw Maynard once more after that, 2 years later. The game was a lot bigger by then. Not like now, but the streets were getting crowded and the first skyscrapers were going up. Brady was long gone by that point. He'd never been cut out for the job, not that I could say I was either. 2 years later, you'd think I would have stopped thinking about it. Just one of those things, you know? It's not like I didn't see any other crazy stuff down there. But in the back of my mind, I wondered if I'd ever see Maynard again, half expecting I would, and half telling myself it hadn't happened in the first place. My report had been detailed and truthful, and it never showed up in my file, so maybe it hadn't, right? I didn't notice him until he was right in front of me, coming toward me down a busy street. He was wearing a new jacket, but he had that same stubble. Our eyes met as we passed, and I nodded, the way you do to a familiar face. I'd already taken another step before I realized who it was. I wanted to talk to him, ask him questions, but by the time I turned around, he had vanished. Standing on the sidewalk, searching the faces coming toward me and heads moving away, I thought maybe I had imagined it again, but in the distance, I heard that deep, rich, human laugh. And I laughed, too.
Thank you for listening to Grounders by Jonathan McGoran, narrated by Thomas Commandline Gideon. You can find out more about them by following the links from our show notes. Last month, we ran our first contest. Terry Martin, the managing editor and publisher of Murky Depths, gave us two copies of Murky Depths issue number 4 to give away. Each issue has been signed by the author of St. Darwin's Spirituals, D.K. Thompson, and signed by the cover artist, Vincent Chong. We are now ready to announce the two winners. The winners are Brian Deacon and Chloe Hope. Congratulations, Brian and Chloe. We will be contacting you so that we can send your signed issues of Murky Depths. Thank you to everyone who entered the contest. One of our favorite writers, Matt Wallace, has been everywhere lately. His old-style pulp fiction character, Deck Gibson, Far Reach Commander, is back on Decoder Ring Theater. As always, the Decoder Ring Theater crew have done a fantastic job with it. They are doing 6 episodes with Deck this summer. You can hear a great interview of Matt on the Tea and Chat podcast with Steve Kilbride. Stranger Things is currently showing Act 1 of Latch Keepers, written by, yep, you guessed it, Matt Wallace. I just watched it. You have to see this video. Finally, Matt has written an amazing story for J.C. Hutchins' Seventh Son Obsidian Project. I've heard this story. You Matt Wallace and J.C. Hutchins fans are going to love it. One more thing. The Parsec Awards are finishing their nominations for this year. Make sure you go there and nominate your favorite speculative fiction podcast. That is it for today. Thank you again for listening. Please hang around for the promos. To find out more about variant frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like variant frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
Hi, my name is Nobilis, and I am a podcaster. You may have heard of me, but even if you haven't, I'd like to take a minute or so of your time and talk about being a good podcast listener. The vast majority of podcasters don't get paid. Most of them work hard to craft the best audio and video content they know how. Some of them ask you for donations, some of them ask you to buy their stuff, some of them ask you for votes, but there's one thing nearly all of them appreciate, and that's feedback. It can be hard to give a podcaster feedback. Many of you are listening in the car, or on the job, or working out, or doing chores. It can be difficult to remember to send feedback when you won't be near a phone or a computer for an hour or more after listening to the show, and so often one show just blurs into the next. Sometimes you don't feel like you have anything meaningful to say. I can relate to that. Sometimes I feel that way when I'm recording my show. But let me tell you, the podcaster whose work you're listening to right now doesn't care if you're contributing some great observation to the global consciousness. He just wants to hear from you, even if all you say is, "I'm a listener, and I like what I hear." So try this. Once a month, sit down with your podcatcher, whether it's iTunes or Juice or just a list of links in your browser, and scroll through the list. Pick out a dozen or so that you feel have given you something valuable. Whether it's a moment of joy or a sparkle of truth or a cathartic tear, and tell them. Make a comment on the website. Send in an email. Make an audio comment. Whatever works for you. Think of it like paying the monthly podcasting bill. And the best part is, paying this bill won't drain your bank account. The true wonder of podcasting is that the people who produce them are so incredibly accessible. They're just ordinary folks like me and you. Well, except for Tim Morris. But that's neither here nor there. My point is that we want to hear what you have to say, even if it's just a few words of encouragement. Thank you for your time, and remember, in order for us to be attention whores, we do need to get paid once in a while.
The President of the United States is dead. He was murdered in the morning sunlight by a 4-year-old boy. So began J.C. Hutchins' Seven Son audiobook trilogy, the most popular podcast novel series in history. Last December, the trilogy concluded. The heroes were triumphant, or so we think. But now, it's time to go back and reveal moments in the Seven Son story that were merely hinted at in the original trilogy. Welcome to Seven Son Obsidian. J.C. Hutchins has opened up his Seven Son universe and invited the seven biggest names in podcast fiction to chronicle a nationwide blackout that rocked America during the Seven Son trilogy. Seven Son Obsidian features short stories from these award-winning and nominated authors: Michael A. Stackpole, Scott Sigler, T. Morris, Mer Lafferty, Matt Wallace, Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, and Christiana Ellis. And even more tales from these trailblazing podcast entertainers: Evo Terra, Dan Klass, Wichita Rutherford, George Probb, TD0013, Soccer Girl, and the cast of The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd. Obsidian also features dozens of audio and video recordings, stories of the blackout as told by its victims, created by Seven Son fans across the globe. On May 31st, the lights go out. America becomes a police state. Because when the power fails, chaos reigns. Subscribe now to Seven Son Obsidian or catch up with the original Seven Son trilogy experience at jchutchins.net.
Collection by Phil Rossi, featuring all new Crescent vignettes as well as other stories. Visit www.crescentstation.net for details. In 2007, he scared you. In 2008, Phil Rossi will drive you insane.
Oh, oh no!
Once upon a time. No, scratch that. It was a dark and stormy night. No. It wasn't until I stumbled over its dead body that it reached up and grabbed me. Yeah, I like that. That's a good beginning. Now I need a supernatural sidekick who's good at cracking jokes, a few friends who can explain the do's and don'ts of magic, an evil villain with a maniacal plan, and a modern setting where havoc can ensue and we'll have a hell of an urban fantasy. No, seriously, guys, I'm not advocating a formula, but I am encouraging you to listen to my podcast, Tale Chasing, for writers and readers of urban fantasy. We'll talk about all things demon, angel, vampire, werewolf, ghost. Oh, hell, we'll just talk about anything supernatural. How to write it, how to critique it. We'll talk to the authors who keep us buying their series, and my own little demented world in which I hammer out my place on the sci-fi fantasy shelf in the bookstore. So come and listen and participate if the mood strikes at tailchasing.com. Tail, like a story, not the one on a cute work hat. Okay, so the dead body grabs her and then she...
Okay, so, you know that promo that we're supposed to be doing for the command line?
Yes.
Since it's already so late, I was thinking about splitting some of the duties.
Yeah, no.
Not
at all.
No?
Brooke's Law.
What's Brooke's Law?
Clearly states that splitting development work among N programmers is expected to have an advantage that is proportional to N, but the cost associated with coordinating and then merging their work is proportional to N squared.
What?
Uh-huh.
What does that mean?
Basically, adding manpower to an already late project just makes it later.
Okay. Where did you get that from? Because I know you didn't come up with that on your own.
I got it from the command line.
Was it one of his hacker word of the week?
Yes, it was.
I see. So the command line is good for not only the hacker word of the week, but also for all kinds of geek news, tech news, hacker cracker news, and copyright issues.
Yes.
Dude, I think we just did our promo.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be at thecommandline.net.
Indeed.
Hello, this is J.C. Hutchins speaking.
Fuck you, Hutchins.
Well, hey, Sigler. Gosh, how's it going? Gee, I hope you're well.
I'm not fucking well. I'm fucking annoyed.
Well, golly, why is that?
The nominations for the Parsec Awards are coming up again.
Gosh, the Parsec Awards? You mean those Neato Keen Awards given to the year's best speculative fiction podcast?
Yeah, that's right. The fucking Parsec Awards. Anyone can nominate their favorite podcast at www.parsecawards.com. The winners are announced at DragonCon in Atlanta, August 29th through September 1st.
Well, holy cow. When's the deadline to nominate stuff?
The nominations close at midnight on June 15th. The stories themselves had to have run between May 1st, 2007 and April 30th, 2008. Whatever kind of podcast, fiction, story, whatever people liked, they can just go to ParsecAwards.com and fucking vote for it.
Wowie! Boy, I bet the Parsec Awards will really have some keen categories this year.
They've got fucking dozens of fucking categories, like best fucking short story, best fucking novella, and best motherfucking long form fiction, which is that thing that you and I do.
What? They have an award for what we do?
Fucking ain't right they do. Best long form fiction, which means best novel.
But you've never won a Parsec.
No fucking shit, you fucking jet age genius. Neither of you.
Well, the Parsec Awards.
Whoa.
Fuck them right in their cornhole motherfucking cheating ears.
That's what I'm saying.
Stupid aardvark sucking dick licking camel fucking shit sucking ass wipes. I swear the next time I fucking hear about one of those goddamn things, I'll put that little statuette where the fucking sun don't shine.
Take a Prozac.
Shit sucking ass motherfucking dick sucking toilet paper roll.
Kiss your mom with that mouth?
Titty licking shit cunt burgers.
Jeez, dude. Take it easy. It's just an award.